Continuing, Canto 3, Chapter 13. Text 12. Yeah. These are instructions by Lord Brahma to his son Swayambhuva Manu. At the very, very beginning of creation. O King, text 12. O King, if you can give proper protection to the living beings in the material world, that will be the best service for me. When the Supreme Lord sees you to be a good protector of the conditioned souls, certainly the master of the senses will be very pleased with you. Purport. The whole administrative system is arranged for the purpose of going back home, back to Godhead. Brahma is the representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Manu is the representative of Brahma. Similarly, all other kings on different planets of the universe are representatives of Manu. The law book for the entire human society is the Manu Samhita, which directs all activities towards the transcendental service of the Lord. Every king, therefore, must know that his responsibility in administration is not merely to extract taxes from the citizens, but to see personally that the citizens under him are being trained in Vishnu worship. Everyone must be educated in Vishnu worship and engaged in the devotional service of Rishi Kesha, the owner of the senses. The conditioned souls are meant not to satisfy their material senses, but to satisfy the senses of Rishi Kesha, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the purpose of the complete administrative system. One who knows the secret, as disclosed here in the version of Brahma, is the perfect administrative head. One who does not know this is a showbottle administrator. By training the citizens in the devotional service of the Lord, the head of a state can be free in his responsibility. Otherwise, he will fail in the onerous duty entrusted to him and thus be punishable by the supreme authority. There is no alternative in the discharge of administrative duty. We'll add one more. Text 13. Brahma's continuing here. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Janardana, Lord Krishna, is the form to accept all the results of sacrifice. If he is not satisfied, then one's labor for advancement is futile. He is the ultimate self, with a capital S. And therefore, one who does not satisfy him certainly neglects his own interests. Purport. Brahma is deputed as the supreme head of the universal affairs, and he, in his turn, deputes Manu and others as, French word, charges of the affairs of the material manifestation. But the whole show is for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahma knows how to satisfy the Lord, and similarly, persons engaged in the line of Brahma's plan of activities also know how to satisfy the Lord. the Lord is satisfied by the process of devotional service, consisting of the ninefold processes of hearing, chanting, etc. It is in one's self-interest to execute prescribed devotional service, and anyone who neglects this process neglects his own self-interest. Everyone wants to satisfy his senses, but above the senses is the mind, above the mind is the intelligence, above the intelligence is the individual self, and above the individual self is the super-self. Above even the super-self is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu Tattva, the primeval Lord, and the cause of all causes is Sri Krishna. The complete process of perfectional service is to render service for the satisfaction of the transcendental senses of Lord Krishna, who is known as Janardana. Starting even in the early stages of Canto 1 and expanded again here in Canto 3 are delineation again and again and again about the duties of an administrative head. Yeah, so many places in Canto 1 with Maharaj Prakshit and his qualification, his duties, the teachings of Bhishma Dev to Yudhisthira, the duties of a king, etc. So here it's very important. I mean, it's obvious, but to state the obvious, Prabhupada would speak over and over, every function needs a leader. Every organization, he would say to public audiences, I'm the head of this organization. But without the head, without a leader, there isn't any party, meaning a group. There has to be a group. It's just, that's... So, leaders lead. One of my god brothers has this cute expression. There's one common thing about all leaders, and that is they have followers. And leaders have to know what the goal is. And they have to know how to get there. At least they have to know what the goal is. And some principles of how to get there. Yadyadashrati shesas tattarivi terurjana. So Manu, being one of the 12 Mahajans, is certainly one of those leaders. So he's not just, he is an administrator, but an administrator must also be Rishi, a qualified leader like Manu. And he already exhibited the submission aspect, the preparedness for instruction to carry out some services aspect. So Brahma is the qualified instructor. Oh, I forgot to send you that document. You remind me. Okay. Qualification of the Brahma is already given. And so he's the leader of the leaders of mankind. Manu specifically gives laws for mankind. And I've not been able to find any reference that gives a really clear answer about, does this include demigods? Like, is mankind mean? What does it mean? Where's the boundary? Where's the limit? Are the demigods also part of the 400,000 species? He didn't say it here in this purport, but it seems to imply the laws of mankind. Manu Samhita applies to demigods also. So it's codes or injunctions how to live life in this temporary creation. Laws for mankind. Manu Samhita. And so how does he get the capacity to make Manu Samhita, to make laws for mankind? By hearing from Brahma. And Brahma instructs him. Of course, we're only getting snippets. We're not getting the full extent of how Brahma is instructing. But we're getting principles. But one can... It's sensible, it's inductively logical that he gave thorough instruction. Like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave thorough instruction to Sanatan Goswami. Imagine, 2 months. Every day, that's a long seminar. And Krishna, in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is instructing Sanatana Goswami so that he can write books and give leadership. So he became the leader amongst the Vaishnavas. In another sense, Rupa Goswami was instructed for a much shorter period of time, but in another sense, he was given full mercy. In any case, Sanatana Goswami was previously a minister, which means he was already conversant in how to lead. He's very, intelligent, not only in scripture and in language, but he was intelligent in leadership. And then, so that with that gift from Krishna, he then got spiritual instruction. And the starting part of his spiritual instruction is, what am I? Because without that foundational piece in place, what good does all of the other valuable endowments that Sanatana Goswami or any one of us may have without that foundational one? Now, to know what I am, not even, he doesn't say who I am, Prabhupada repeatedly says what I am, meaning I'm spirit soul, but that's a who, not just a what. And what do spirit souls do? They serve Krishna. So the emphasis here is from the yesterday's verse and this morning's 2 verses, pleasing Vishnu. So the duty of an administrator is to know that, to know what or who he is, and to do that with himself and with those who he's leading so that Krishna will be pleased. So Brahma knows how, he's instructing Manu how, he writes Manu Samhita for all of mankind, and similarly anyone that's in a leadership position. This is an administrator, but the principle goes as well for mother, father, teacher, guru, a head of state. Same principle for all 5 of those entities. You take the position of leadership, it's a great responsibility. And as Prabhupada is writing, otherwise he will fail in the onerous duty entrusted to him and thus be punishable by the supreme authority. So that's the principle. Then the next verse, it flows naturally. Who's that worshipable one? Well, he gives the name. Janardana. Janardana is the name of Supersoul. Based upon the position of the symbols of Vishnu in the hands of Vishnu, names are given. And Janardana is the name of the Lord of the Heart. And the Lord of the Heart, the verse is saying, it connects with duties of mankind. It's sacrifice unto Vishnu. And more specifically, sacrifice unto Janardana. Because what does Janardana do? He, mayadhyakshena prakriti, suyate sacharatram. He oversees adhyaksha prakriti. He controls prakriti. He doesn't get his hands dirty. He does through potencies, but he, through his potencies, controls material nature. Interesting. What Prabhupada is presenting in the purport is, although he's the supreme authority, he has an authority above him, or an entity above him that is his source, that's Krishna. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. I learned this from Radhika Raman. In his language, Vishnu is a suppressed, not in the psychological sense, but in the ontological sense. The fullness of Bhagavan is not presented in the manifestation of Paramatma. The Rupa Goswami's so many percentage of the total qualities of Krishna within Vishnu, and then Krishna has more. So, because of the function, Vishnu doesn't exhibit everything. But tattva-wise, he's the same, but Paramatma has a specific function, and the specific function is in relation to prakriti. It's part of our sambandha gyan, understanding these things. And people that don't have this guidance of great souls, it's a mind spin, because there are different aspects of that non-dual absolute truth, and some focus on this, that, or the other thing, and some just get confused. And the confusion results in, pablum. Brahman. All of these other things are upadis, and all there really is Brahman, and that's it. And Brahman is also, anyway, our Vaishnava teaching gives us a clear picture of what's the big picture. What's Brahman, what is Paramatma, what is Bhagavan. So while making reference, Brahma is giving reference to the Paramatma feature as Janardana, and he is the one unto whom sacrifices are to be offered. People are making sacrifice anyway. People are undergoing austerities anyway. People are giving in charity anyway. And the Bhagavad Gita's teaching and Brahma's teaching to Manu make those sacrifices, the formal ones, the rituals within the Vedas, or the generic sacrifices that we make all the time. Make that as a sacrifice unto Vishnu, because he's the bhokta. Bhoktaram yagya tapasam. So you do some yagya, formal or informal, Vedic or just live your life, and that the duties of life should be in accord with the codes of Manu or the codes of Varnashram. And the purpose of those codes is to satisfy Vishnu. The purpose of all the Vedas, the purpose of life. But people don't know. If they don't know, they have something else as the goal. There's a very interesting conversation between Prabhupada and a very friendly, affectionate German professor, Professor Durkheim. And, you know, they got to, as they got to know each other, they became, it became regular exchanges. And of course, being a professor, he had a perspective on things. And one of his perspectives on education or knowledge was knowledge for knowledge's sake. And Prabhupada would disagree. No, knowledge has to have some application. And Durkheim would say, that's not necessary. Knowledge for knowledge's sake. You know, like, you know, be in this detached mood and just have knowledge. And Prabhupada was, you know, disagreeing. And finally, you know, he was doing it gently and finally got really heavy. And that ended the conversation on knowledge for knowledge's sake. Practical application. That's the practical application is Vishnu is to be pleased or Krishna is to be pleased. Sacrifice and knowledge for removal of ignorance. And then what do you do with that removal of ignorance condition? You submit yourself to Krishna. So that's the principle. Then you go to the detail of whatever it is. Cooking in the kitchen is a real easy one. Or going to buy the ingredients that you're going to cook in the kitchen. Similarly, or when you're earning money to buy the ingredients to make your offerings to Krishna. You keep going down and down and down, and everything that you do, not only, you know, be a good person, be moral and don't hurt other people, and that, you know, that's certainly, but what's the purpose of that? And if you don't have that purpose in place, the line keeps moving because there's no standard. There's no person. It's vox populi. It's, you know, the waves of the modes of nature move, and then there's liberals, conservatives, and moderates. But it keeps moving because there's no real standard. People are like a ship at sea without a captain. Very dangerous. Just a little anecdote. On Vishnu is to be pleased. And he gives Dharma. Some number of years ago, long, long time ago, one devotee, his father was a professor at the University of Mississippi in Oxford, Mississippi. Prasanatma is the name. And disciple of Hridayananda Maharaj. And we knew each other, so he invited me to go to the University of Mississippi. And his father had two PhDs, religion and philosophy. And he was a professor. I don't know which one. And so I spoke at his class or some gathering that he arranged. And there was also a Sri Vaishnava family. Their name is Sridhar. This devotee is American. His father's American. Two children. Prasanatma was one. Dr. Sridharan, also a professor, had a son who was the valedictorian of the state of Mississippi, and he was graduating from high school at 14 with a full scholarship at Brandeis University. And he was off at a special school, so I hadn't met him until that time. So he came home, and he was on his way to the White House because the outstanding student from every state, all 50, got to go to the White House and meet whoever the president was at that time. So he was like, you know, a bright person. He ended up becoming a graduate from Stanford University with a PhD in nuclear physics. He's a bright young man. So he said, can I ask you a question? This is after the program, just with the families. My friends at school have challenged me. Why are you a theist? On what grounds are you a theist? Because a more honest position is, you don't know. So why don't you take the position that we take, that is, an agnostic moralist? You don't do things that are wrong because they're wrong, and you do things that are right because they're right. You're a moralist, but you don't know whether there's God or not. Do you know whether there's God or not? You don't know. Be honest. So I didn't know how to answer them. So I asked Mom and Dad, and they said, you can ask Swamiji, he's coming soon. So here's what I said. It's just a practical application of the same principle. What's morality? Everything changes. Take anything, you know, abortion or, you know, anything. Take anything. Anything. Here's an example. I have a friend, devotee, who's involved with the Board of Education of New York City, and this was, you know, some years ago. They had a big fun time. They were saying what it took to get expelled from a classroom 10 years ago and today. So 10 years ago, if you spoke out of turn without raising your hand, you were asked to leave the room. Or if you threw a spit wad in the classroom, you were asked to leave the room. Or if you talked back to the teacher, you were asked to leave the room. 10 years later, if you're carrying a concealed weapon, you're asked to leave the room. Or sent to the principal. If you threatened the life of another student in the classroom, you're asked to leave the room and go see the principal. And if you get the third one, you know, you also intimidate or threaten the life of the teacher if they don't do what you want, or if they insist that you do what they want, you threaten their life. You ask to leave the room. So, where the line, when there's no standard, we accept. In one sense, it's practical. I accept that there's God because otherwise there's no real standard. It's just fudging and pragmatism, and there's no real standard of what's morality. But conversely, according to our scripture, God gives standards. Dharmam hi sakshat bhagavat prinitam, and that's the standard, and doesn't change over time. Or, you know, the modes of nature move this way, that way. It says, this is the standard. And just like fire burns, and if you don't know that fire burns, it doesn't not burn because you didn't know. There are laws. There are laws that are the morality laws or any other laws of nature. And, you're denying that there's laws doesn't mean you're free from the laws. So here, the administrators may not know. And if they don't, they're punishable by the supreme authority. So, well, you know, you people accept God as the supreme authority, and God gives the standards of how administrators should administrate. Why? I don't. Okay? You don't. That's a free will choice. And then there's consequences for you and for others. So Brahma is not whimsical. If he, you know, his assignment is creation. So he doesn't just like build the creation and then walks away, because the creation has a purpose. All things have a purpose. And he's instructing, so there has to be a leader, and the leader has to know what the purpose is and how to fulfill it, and then act accordingly. And Manu is such a person. So we're getting the opportunity by reading Srimad Bhagavatam to understand the purpose of everything. And it's not just information, it's the means to live our lives properly in a place that's really problematic. Material world. And Kali Yuga it escalates the problematic nature of the place. Then the last point is the interest of the Supreme Self is the interest of the individual self. And conversely, one who neglects the Supreme Self is neglecting his own self-interest. Or it's the same as this idea that when you, from our prayers of Prahlad, when someone offers something to the Supreme Lord, the person that's benefiting is the one who's making the offering to the Supreme Lord, because he doesn't need anything. He's self-sufficient. So the person who's receiving the benefit is the one who's making the offering to the Supreme Lord. That's really one's self-interest. A calculating person may think, this is my self-interest, I'm going to do it because it's my self-interest. But the higher position is, I want to do this because this is who I really am. This is my real nature. And then self-interest and happiness and knowledge and everything else follows the horse that pulls the cart. And maturing in devotional service, in practical terms for us, is becoming more and more clear with everything we say and do. That's the purpose. We make decisions based upon that purpose. And if we're not thinking that purpose, it's really easy to get off the center of the road and get into risky territory. There are tendencies, and it's really easy just to do the tendency thing. It's like a car where the alignment is not right, and you let your hands off the steering wheel, and it pulls over to the left or to the right. So you have to keep your hand on the steering wheel. It's better to get the alignment done. So if the senses, the mind and the intelligence and the heart are in alignment, then intelligence drives the mind, drives the senses towards the goal. Unfortunately, the alignment is not always right because we're conditioned and we have tendencies. And we follow those tendencies because they're tendencies. They govern us. Bhakti means declare war. And Maya fights back. She doesn't say, oh, he's very serious, or she's very serious. I'll let them go. Doesn't work like that. But still one has to remain serious and with commitment and depending upon proper conduct and the purpose for that proper conduct. Then we get strength beyond our own strength and we get closer to the goal and the conditioning slackens. Then we should become complacent because, I got some relief. Just stay focused. The complete process of perfectional service is to render service for the satisfaction of the transcendental senses of Lord Krishna, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam, Bhaktir Uttama, who is known as Janardana. Discussion? Yes.
Maharaj, I have two questions. First one is, how do I know what are my tendencies or what is my real nature? How do I discriminate or distinguish?
Well, real nature is the spiritual one and tendencies are the conditioned ones. Put your hand in your bead bag and start chanting and then you'll find out what your tendencies are. The mind goes there, and the mind goes there, and the mind goes... Those are tendencies. And then the legs go with following the mind. Step back and, you know, be the observer of the mind. And you'll find tendencies. You won't notice it if you're caught up in the movie. You'll be just ruled by the tendencies and you won't even know what your tendencies are. You have to have some detachment, knowing what the mind is. It's, you saw that we, you know, this presentation in Naperville, the television screen and the person looking at the blank television, the mind is just like carrying images of our past impressions, and that's, and we have our favorite ones. And there's some more prominent, some more recessive, and that's our tendencies. Just see where the mind goes. That tells you your tendencies. Ask your friends. They'll tell you.
My question about real nature is, from a practical perspective, Maharaj, on...
You have to wait for that. Start with the position of being the servant. And then details start to fill out. Don't go to the position of being a servant. Stay in the position of, I'm at the center and I'm meant to be the enjoyer of stuff. You won't find your spiritual nature. Servant.
And the second question I have is, you mentioned about the Manu Samhita, where it is the law book for mankind. So I was wondering if the modern day, whatever the codes we have in terms of morality, sacrifices, and other things for humans, do they come from the Manu Samhita, or...
Well, it depends on how much corruption has taken place over time. And so the uncorrupted is disciplic succession. And disciplic succession is made up of acharyas, and they know how to apply this nectar devotion. Principles that may adjust details without changing principles. Then it's Manu Samhita. Although the form may be different, the essence is preserved.
Is the Shantaras Shantaras. I'm thinking about Shantaras as a way to try to get into a service attitude.
The language is contradictory. Because beyond Shanta is service attitude.
Right. Sometimes I find myself that I want to be in the service attitude, but I feel like I'm not even being able to contemplate what is happening. And I'm thinking, is that because I'm not even in the Shantara?
No, that's not the reason why.
No?
No.
Can you explain how Shantaras can be applied, or...
We don't. Just bluntly, we're introduced to Dasya. Now, examples of Shantaras that you find in Nectar Devotion is land, water, trees... Sometimes cows are put in that list. Elsewhere they're, parental affection. They give their milk. But the encouragement, this is my understanding, the encouragement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching is we begin in this Dasya Rasa. So Dasya Rasa is a rasa. And service... The contemplation is wrong. If I'm having a struggle getting into the mood of being the service and, as you said, understanding things, that's the mind. You don't pacify the mind by Shantarasa. The mood of service. The difficulty is the mind that is thinking, I want to be the enjoyer. It's the mind. It's the contamination of the mind. And the free will choice that says, I want to be in Krishna's service, I'm rebellious. I want to be peaceful on my own terms. And the situation here isn't a peaceful one. Dasya is, I want to be in my relationship with Krishna, serving him, pleasing him, in the humble, menial servant role. So go there.
So at any point do we experience on the way to Shanta, on the way to perform devotional service, do we experience Shantarasa?
Perhaps. There's not much discussion about that I'm aware of. Devotees, sadhakas, having their rasa as Shantarasa, and that's where they go. In the mature stages, become a Chintamani stone in spiritual world. Neutrality. On authoritative statements, I don't know any authoritative statement that says yes to your question. Therefore, perhaps. Rather, the explanation is always given. Not always. Almost always given, that the mood of service takes one into this active engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses. Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam. And that's not neutrality. You always have something.
I've been thinking about something as you've been speaking. There's Vishnu. He seems to like things very ordered and
regular. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And I'm of a particular personality type that I very much in my life have taken shelter of order and regularity.
Great, Vishnu Bhakta.
Well, maybe for material ends.
Okay.
But it also seems that though Krishna likes that, it seems that I need to harmonize order with flexibility.
Sure.
When being considerate and things.
Because you're not the controller.
Yeah, and this is, I would like to hear a little bit about this.
Well, you're subordinate to the controller.
Right.
That's the flexibility part.
But that controller wants me to be ordered, and then he throws.
But you know, then you just have to follow what his order is, not yours. That's the flexibility part.
Mm-hmm. And being attuned to that in the moment.
Often yeah.
That happens like in the moment.
Yeah. You got it. That's the flexibility part. You have to have a plan. You can't live your life, you know, planless. You want to go from point A to point B. It takes steps to go to point A to point B. All of a sudden, you're heading for point C. You've got to be flexible. Is this really what, you know, is this the plan of the Supreme Lord? It's, you know, it's a little bit very similar to what happened here a few verses ago. Brahma was considering, gee, I just did all this universe thing and I made some arrangements so there could be Prajapatis, but it's not happening. I was going from point A to point B, and here's C. So I'll accept it as the providential arrangement, and then voila, came the answer. Now, it's not for us. Voila, here comes the answer. Here comes Shatarupa and Swayambhu Manu take care of the situation that I was. That's the flexibility build because I'm so powerful. But you know, Brahma is so powerful. So for us, it's you know an inspiration. How to make a proper free will choice given the new circumstance, that unexpected circumstance. That's the flexibility part. Super soul will guide. Yenamamu biyantite. How to come to him, because that's the goal. And flexibility is built in. Because the goal doesn't change. The principles don't change either. But, you know, the plan may change. And that's the flexibility part. But the goal and the principles don't change. And I'm happy with that. I like being the servant. I like being, you know, you start in the morning heading in this direction, before the end of the day we're going in that direction. That's just fine. If that's what Krishna wants. Yes.
How do you overcome the fear of failure?
I know what you mean. depends what you well, the way to overcome the fear of failure has to do with what's the definition of success. It's one of the segments of this art of meditation, overcoming negative emotions. And there's this whole thing, you know, the interactive session where we ask the audience in pairs or in groups or whatever to discuss what's the standard of success? How did you reach that standard of success? Is that really your standard of success? Or is it something you just bought into because that's what's out there? That it changes. And then there's categories of things that determine largely, you know, sociological influences. And so what's really success? So it's like overcoming the sense of failure is to redefine what success is. And then you do that. I'll give a little example. I was busy with stuff, but this letter came with somebody that was spiraling out of control in a depression direction, thinking, you know, for the last 2 years everything's been a failure, everything with academics and career and relationships, and, you know, I'm a failure. One of the responses, as I sent this devotee, explained it, but sent them this image I like from this presentation. It shows under microscope an embroidery or a tapestry. And there's different colored threads going in all different directions, and it's really chaotic. You know, it's like, my life is chaos. I'm a failure. But you take the microscope lens away and you see what the embroidery looks like, and it's beautiful. There's a plan. So when I don't know what the plan is, I can be in anxiety and fearful and feel myself a failure because, you know, the plan didn't happen. Instead, it's going all this other crazy thing. And it doesn't make any sense to me, and, you know, so different negative emotions. Failure is one of them, and it's a big deal in modern times. As one of the slides says, you know, 100 years ago, it's just a bump in the road, and today it's like, you know, get labeled. And you label yourself. You know, called, you know, depression. It's one of the triggers for depression. And it's societal. You're not a failure. You just, you know, didn't know the big picture. You're heading in the morning going this way, and then you're over there. So I failed. So this devotee, it was like one of the things that they were obsessing about was their career. Just like, it's not working out, and I don't... So it was really simple. You know, What are the things that you've done that you really like? And it was really easy. So they should do that. She said, yeah. You know, all I've been doing is thinking about money. And nothing was working out. So I'm thinking I'm a failure. And it's just the lesson, the threads that were going this way, that way, in different colors, was money, really? Is that what happiness is? Is that how you make decisions? And what's success? Get money? And where'd you get that idea? From society. The material society. So step back from that one. What's success? So, you know, without details of how the rest of the conversation went, it was like, whew. I'm not a failure. I wasn't really headed for depression. I thought I was. I just didn't see the big picture. And I was disconnected from who I really am, you know, on the material side at least. And, you know, other than, you know, the superimposed, these are the standards of success you have to conform to. Otherwise you're a failure. So what's success? And even steps in the direction of success is success. It got resolved in, you know, really quickly. There was an opportunity for some employment that they could get in 2 months training. And I said, it's not like that's what you have to do for the rest of your life. Whatever you learn, you can use that for the rest of your life, but you may not be doing that for the rest of your life. But do something that's meaningful to you. It's doable. and you have something that's that inspires you. And it had to do with a junior high school teacher that was teaching something or other, and the way that they taught, it really touched them. So I think in this field I can be like that. At least I can try to be like that. Great. That's success. Step in the right direction. Be who you are. Instead of like get money. It's not that, you know, mom and dad are putting that pressure. It's just that's so. Suggestion for mom and dad had to do with how she can get money. Go into IT because you can get money. I don't like IT. Anyway, law. Get money. Connect with who you are. That peel away the layers of, okay, that's not who I am. Who am I? Or, Sanatana Goswami's, what am I? And how do I live my life that way? That's success. Like, you know, the question yesterday, Deva Madhava's question about being a human being, what's the essence of being a human being? It's knowing who you are. That's success. And don't do that. At the end of the conveyor belt, you have all these successes and not failures. And it's a failure. It's not an easy question to answer. Who am I? It's tough. Like, you know, it's very elusive. It's uncomfortable to know that you don't know. Don't ask the question. It's anything else? Srila Prabhupada ki jai.